Hi, I'm Christian Döring. My question is, you mentioned in this very nice way the heat transport by particles, and you showed with the standard model particles how the heat can be transported, and my question would be, do you also think about, like, when you add new particles beyond the standard model, the heat transport will probably change depending on their mean free path? Is it also included in your considerations?
So at the very end of tomorrow's lecture, I was going to, and I still will, flash up a slide of work that was really done more by my grad student, Stephen Harris, than by me, in which they looked at axion-like particles as being, playing the role that neutrinos played in what I showed. So what I showed was, you know, you look around, who's the most weakly interacting of them all, who's got the longest mean free path, and they looked at these axion-like particles, which are weakly coupled, and for those, I can't remember the contours in the slide, you'll see it tomorrow, but I think it's difficult to trap them, so they never form a Fermi gas that could provide diffusive transport of heat, but they can radiate. And they looked at how much cooling could be, extra cooling could come from radiation of axion-like particles, and they found that there was a little corner of the allowed space where the axion-like particles could provide a comparable amount of cooling to standard model mechanisms. So I think the answer is, it does appear to be possible that beyond the standard model particles could play a role or, you know, be ruled out either way.
And if I may add a small follow-up question, does it then maybe, like, can you compare that maybe with the change of the gravitation, of a change in the gravitational wave signal from the InSpiral if you have physics beyond the time? So can you basically learn from different observables something about the physics beyond the standard model from Newton's star mergers then?
Right. So there's sort of a pipeline where at one end you've got observers observing mergers, and it could be observing gravitational waves, it could be observing electromagnetic signals. We, you know, one dreams that maybe someday one could see neutrinos from mergers. So that's the observers. So in order to make use of those observations, you need theoretical predictions, and that, because the gravitational aspect is so nonlinear and strongly coupled, you have to have computer simulations. So that's the technology that got developed in the last sort of 15, 20 years, the ability to do numerical GR for these two inspiraling and then merging black holes or neutron stars. So those, it's the simulations that predict electromagnetic signals, gravitational wave signals, neutrino signals. And so then in this pipeline, the work I was describing is that I do is one step along in the pipeline where we are trying to help the simulation people by providing them with our best estimates of what microphysics they need to include in their simulation. And that means, from where I am in the pipeline, it's really very difficult to say anything about what will come out of that simulation through all this nonlinear gravitational physics to which the microphysics feeds in. But I don't think anyone has an intuition about, oh, well, you know, if we make the equation of state this way, or if there's a lot of heat transport, or if there's a lot of bulk viscosity, or whatever, what will that produce at the end of the day in terms of maybe gravitational waves, in terms of maybe it could affect nucleosynthesis, you know, that how much stuff gets spewed out that can then be turned into the elements. You know, we now believe many of the heavy elements we have on Earth actually were made in neutron star mergers, even though they're very rare, you know, one in a million years as opposed to one in 100 years for supernovas. We still think that those very rare events are so baryon-rich and so good at making elements that actually they are responsible for a good chunk of the heavy elements we have on Earth. So whether it's something like that, whether it's an electromagnetic signal from the kilonova afterwards, who knows, right? But I'm afraid that's a very long way of saying, from my position in the whole sort of collaborative pipeline, it's hard to say what will come out the other end of that pipe.
Thank you.
You can be the... who's the MC? Who chooses?
Right, so I'm Avnish Bastosharm from Nikkev. I have three questions.
Oh, you're going for the jackpot.
Yeah. Right, so the first one is about this equilibrium time, which you mentioned to be between 10 and 20 milliseconds. Now, does this depend on the size or the masses of the merging stars?
No, that's an intensive property mm-hmm. that you're looking at something like, in this material, would a hot region of a certain size, how long would it take a hot region of a certain size to cool down via heat conduction? Okay, and that's a property of that material. We're not asking, are we in a box? What size, other than it has to be bigger than the chunk, than the hot region, right? We're not saying, is it, if the hot region's a kilometer across, we're not asking, is it in a 10 kilometer size box or a 100 kilometer size box or 1,000? That doesn't come in.
Okay.
So global properties of the merger don't come in other than the finite size effect of neutrino trapping. Okay, the one place the size of the merger matters is that it tells you at what temperature neutrinos get trapped, because they get trapped when their mean free path is smaller than the size of the star. So that's the one finite volume effect that we do worry about. But the rest of it is all more intensive properties.
Okay. So the second one is about the neutrinos conductivity. So you talked about these two regions where you have the temperature roughly smaller than 5 MeV and also larger than 5 MeV. Now what if the temperature is exactly at 5 MeV?
Well, okay, I hope I used, less sim and GTR sim with a wiggly line in there, because there isn't a sharp temperature above which neutrinos are trapped and below which they aren't trapped. Mm-hmm. For one thing, the mean free path of a neutrino depends on its energy. So if you have a thermal spectrum of neutrinos, then you may find that the high energy ones are trapped and the low energy ones aren't trapped. So there's going to be a rather messy kind of crossover from very low temperatures where they all escape, very high temperatures, most of the thermal distribution is trapped. And in between, there's this sort of horrible zone where it's not any kind of easily understandable thing. So based on calculations of the mean free path, we think that crossover is happening in the 5 to 10 MeV range for temperature.
Okay.
But it's a very fuzzy sort of thing.
So how would you derive this 5 MeV? Like on what does it depend?
So it depends on the neutrino mean free path, which you calculate by looking at these weak interaction cross sections of a neutrino propagating through nuclear matter and scattering off of protons or electrons or neutrons by W and Z mediated interactions.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Hi, this is Daniel Kincses from Hungary. So my question is there a way that experimental results from lower energy heavy ion collisions could help constrain or complement the theoretical modeling of neutron stars and neutron star mergers?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So that hasn't been so easy to deliver on up to this point. What you would need in order to get that would be to have some model which was applicable and plausible in both heavy ion collisions and in much cooler bulk neutron or nuclear matter. And so as you heard from Misha, you can't do the actual theory, the QCD itself. You can't do it analytically at all, because it's strongly coupled, and numerically you can't do it at high density. So you have to use some model. So already you're using a model, right? And already it won't be a controlled approximation, most likely. But then you'd need one that can capture confinement, right? Because you want to be able to see the sort of deconfinement in the quark gluon plasma that is created in heavy ion collisions in the same model that you see the neutron-proton-electron matter degenerate Fermi gas in a neutron star. And are there models that can do that? There may be some holographic models that can do it. I'm not active in that field, so I know that there are some of these sort of models that are based on the same sort of duality that we were just hearing about, between, you know, a higher dimensional gravitational classical theory and a quantum field theory. Some of these models are able to describe the strongly coupled regime of the quantum field theory, but it won't be QCD. The toy model aspect of it there is it'll be some supersymmetric large N, you know, gauge theory with sort of a poetic resemblance to QCD, and then you can use that and then constrain. If you pretend that that's a correct description of heavy ion collisions with real QCD at N equals 3 and no supersymmetry, you know, then you can try and move those constraints over into its description of nuclear matter. But really, at that point, you're kind of hanging stuff on a rather thin thread, I feel. But I know people do this.
I have another question. Maybe you said that already and I missed it. But how do you, in the end, discriminate between different models? Or how will you decide which model describes the neutron star merger most accurate in the end? You cannot go in there and test directly, right?
Right. So what I was showing you was step one, or maybe even step zero, of a program. When I first started working on this, my plan was to do the same thing that I'd done in previous work, where I was focusing on quark matter and color superconducting quark matter and signatures of its presence in isolated neutron stars. But what I discovered was that nobody had done the transport properties of neutron, proton, electron matter under neutron star merger conditions. So in order to have a null hypothesis of just the most regular, ordinary, vanilla stuff, neutrons, protons, and electrons, to compare with, I actually had to do that calculation first. So we're now getting past that. One of my postdoc just did a paper on hyperon bulk viscosity, which turns out not to be very large, but they don't contribute that much. So the idea would be, at the microscopic end of this pipeline, to have a bunch of different forms of matter that are plausible, you know, neutron, proton, electron matter, with or without muons, with or without neutrino trapping, with or without hyperons. Maybe you can look at other things like some forms of meson condensation, and then you could look at deconfined quark matter, which also has different forms of ordering, different Cooper pairing patterns. And you'd have this all these different forms of matter that could be present in the star, and you would calculate their properties, and then you feed them all in the pipeline to the people who run the simulations, and then out comes something. And the slightly discomforting aspect of it is that what we've already talked about, that you really don't have much intuitive sense of, you know, what is a large bulk viscosity or a small bulk viscosity or whatever it might be in the material going to translate into in terms of signatures out of a merger, because the merger is such a nonlinear event. So you just have to, you know, do all these different microscopic things and then give them to the people who run the simulations.
So this means, in principle, it could be hard to discriminate in the end by light signals.
Right. It could be that all these different things end up looking pretty much the same. Okay. If you're unlucky, that could happen. Mm-hmm.
Right. Thank you.
Yes, I want to throw a remark or question in between. Many times you said that things tend to smoothen out because of all the short distance conductivity and so on. But in your simulations, it looked as if small distance structures were going around quite some time before they dissolved.
Okay.
And that suggests to me that you have a problem of turbulence. And people who do turbulence, they have their own way of going through different scales. You just ask what happens at a very tiny scale, then you go to higher and higher scales and integrate the whole system that way.
Right. Okay, so I just want to be clear, those are not my simulations. I don't do the simulations. I got those from the Frankfurt Rosola group at Frankfurt. But yes, so what they say, if you ask the merger simulation people, what happens as you make your grid finer, right? Because what we usually do in any sort of finite element calculation is you make the grid finer and you want to see things settle down to you know, a definite result, and then it doesn't matter what the grid is anymore. And what they've told me is that up to this point, every time they make their grid finer, they see some sort of structure in the sense of, you know, flows with, you know, shear flows and things like that on the new scale that is revealed by making the grid finer. And that sounds a lot like turbulence, right? So it may well be that as they continue this refinement and make their grids better and better, we will discover that there is in fact turbulence going on down at the bottom, and then we'll have to take that into account. We'll have to think about that. And that, the indications so far are completely consistent with that.
That one, hand first.
Hi, I'm Adrian Kuntz. So with the next generation detector, we can hope to see also gravitational wave from core collapse supernovae. So do you think you can learn something from nuclear matter from these gravitational waves?
I think that the region that core collapse supernovae explore in that density temperature plane is more a region of moderate density and high temperature, because you're dealing with a proto-neutron stars. You heard earlier, yesterday I think it was, about this, the iron core that develops as a result of fusion, and then it collapses, and as it collapses, it then creates this neutron degeneracy limited object, where the neutron degeneracy pressure stops it from contracting anymore, and that that sudden stop creates a shock that propagates outwards and makes a supernova. But at the point where that happens and all these neutrinos are being emitted and the explosion is happening, that proto-neutron star has not yet, I don't think, become as dense as the neutron star is going to be in the end. And the merger is the merger of two isolated, completed, settled down, as dense as they can get objects. So if one is interested in the not quite so high density end of the phase diagram, then yes, supernovas are interesting. But I actually am interested in the very high density end of the diagram, because what I'm hoping for is to, going back to my sort of, you know, my imaginary menu of different types of matter, to have a look at forms of quark matter, for example, which would only be in the core of a neutron star, and see if they influence that. So my impression is that supernovas don't probe that, but since I don't work on supernovas, okay, I have to admit I might be exaggerating that.
Thank you.
But I'll select you.
All right. So I noticed that you were looking a lot into like the 10 to 20 millisecond range. And I was wondering if you ever look before that and like if there's interesting physics to be discovered like right at the coalescence of the black holes and not like 10 milliseconds after.
Do you mean like 1 millisecond?
Yeah, or even before that.
Is
there anything interesting in that time frame?
Okay, so there's different questions there. All right, so we're looking for something where some sort of out of equilibrium or equilibration physics plays a role. And yes, if there's some kind of equilibration process that operates on a 1 millisecond time scale, it's going to play a role in that first millisecond of the merger. But that's kind of difficult, as you saw with thermal conductivity. Most things don't tend to want to operate at such a short time scale. Or else they're strong interactions, they operate at a 10 to the minus 23 second time scale, and equilibration is instantaneous, and again, there's nothing to see. So you're looking, so really you'd like to have as long as possible to see some equilibration phenomenon occur, right? The longer the time frame over which you can watch, the more different equilibration phenomena you might see. So I kind of don't want to just look at the first millisecond. You know, if there's something that operates that quickly, of course I'll look at it. But you know, I really want the widest possible window to capture as much as I can. Let's see, and the other question was about the in-spiral. Yes, so we did think a little bit, and other people thought about, during the in-spiral, is there any sort of interesting out-of-equilibrium physics going on? And it seemed, last time I looked into this, it seemed like you're not driving these neutron stars out of equilibrium very much when they're going around each other. They're tidally flexing each other, but they're kind of locked. And the result is that it's not like individual fluid elements are feeling much action. You know, the whole star is being deformed, but an individual fluid element just sort of gets pulled along like a tide, and it's not being squeezed and unsqueezed or twisted or heated up dramatically. There aren't many gradients because everything's kind of very smooth at that point. Right? So there isn't that sort of that crazy, you know, sort of non-uniformity that you see in the merger itself. And that non-uniformity is a great opportunity for equilibration phenomena. So it didn't seem like there was nearly enough of that in the in-spiral stage. But again, some clever person might spot something.
Sure, thanks.
Okay. Anastasia Omeluch. Do we expect that all neutron stars have the same, let's say, equation of state? Or in other words, do we expect that state, that the matter has the same state in all neutron stars?
Right, okay. So yeah, certainly in the case of material that we find on Earth, we don't expect, you know, a cubic centimeter of stuff to be the same no matter where you get the stuff from on Earth. They're all different from each other. But really, they're all metastable. You know, they're all you know, hung up in some local minimum. And really, of course, all nuclei would like to be iron. Right, iron has the best binding energy per nucleon, and so really it all wants to become iron, but it can't because they're all separated from each other. If you're an oxygen nucleus, how are you going to become iron? You know, where's the extra neutrons and protons going to come from? You can't do it. So all these nuclei that make us, that form us and the world that we live in, are all metastable, pretty much except iron. So in a neutron star, however, with all the neutrons and protons crammed together and squeezed together by gravity, there's no more of these metastable barriers anymore. The whole thing can settle down to whatever the ground state is. Now, there might be a barrier. There might be some quark matter phase that you have to tunnel to get to, and people have hypothesized about that. So there's room for some interesting things like that. But broadly speaking, the answer to your question is yes, there is one equation of state because there are no longer any barriers. The neutron-proton ratio can settle down via the weak interaction to whatever it wants. There's nothing stopping it from happening. Okay, so other than the fact that you might be able to cook up some other phases separated by first order phase transitions and have coexistence, you may be able to do that a little bit, but not to the level that we see on Earth, where there's a wide variety of forms of matter with different equations of state.
Thank you.
Did that get your question? Okay. Is anybody who hasn't asked a question yet? I feel we should give you. You haven't asked it. Okay. Yes. Go ahead.
Hello. So my question is related to, I think we already had one observation of a neutron star merger in LIGO, but maybe in the future, if we had, for example, observation of neutrinos or electromagnetic signals together, would be able to extract information about thermal conductivity, or even if it happens a phase transition during the collision, how much information would we able to get from, for example, neutrinos or electromagnetic signals or even gravitational waves in the future?
Yeah, I'm afraid I have to give you the same answer I gave before about the pipeline. You know, I'm doing the microphysical inputs to the simulations. The simulations are producing results that can be compared with the observations, and it's difficult to intuitively jump that simulation and say, if there's a lot of thermal conductivity, then we expect to see, you know, a difference in the ring down, you know, after the merger, or we expect to see a different dominant frequency at the moment of merger. I don't think anyone can make that sort of intuitive physical shortcut through this nonlinear, general relativistic event. So you pretty much have to feed in stuff and then see what comes out. And it's discomforting because one likes to have an intuition for what should happen, but I haven't heard anybody give one, and I can't think of an intuitive shortcut through it.
Thanks.
In the very back there.
So people haven't included.
Are you going to ask? You're going to do the "say who I am" thing, or
what? Sorry.
Aren't you supposed to? Do you
know? Sophie Mutze.
Okay.
Sorry. So people haven't included the effects of neutrinos in simulations yet.
Oh no, they had. So they do have some form of neutrino physics included. They try to model it in various ways, but not in a way that would capture thermal conductivity.
Okay.
Okay. So they have sort of leakage schemes and things where they treat they have an approximate treatment, but they would not capture thermal conductivity. So in general, all the simulations that have been done so far, of which I showed you a movie, one of them, none of them include any of the kind of out of equilibrium or dissipative phenomena. Up to now, it's been enough of an achievement to be able to take an equation of state, static, assumed to be fully equilibrated, and just run that equation of state through a GR simulation of a merger and see what comes out. That's been the state of the art. And so what I was talking about is which additional physics do we need beyond that? What sort of out of equilibrium physics do we need to suggest that they include? But they're only now at the point of even thinking about going beyond the equation of state.
And do you know how they would do it? Are there any ideas of?
Well, so the one that looks most promising is bulk viscosity, which is going to be my topic tomorrow.
Okay.
And there are various ways of doing that, but I mean, it might be better to save that discussion for when we've actually got some information on the table.
Thanks.
Yeah, name's Aidan Chapman Davies. And okay, so it's a two-part question with a very quick first part. First part is, so can the merger of two neutron stars result in a black hole as its final state?
Yeah, I think generally that's the expectation, is it'll result in a black hole.
Okay, so then the follow-up question then is, so there's an intermediate, large neutron star that forms
right.
As a result of that, and then that, the collapse
It may
continues.
Or may not collapse into a black hole, depending on whether it's beyond the maximum in the mass radius relation for possible
okay.
neutron stars.
And in the case when it does collapse down to a black hole, how does that time scale compare to the time scale of
okay.
these thermal processes?
Yes, I think that's a longer time scale. It can spend, I think, hundreds of milliseconds or maybe even seconds gradually spinning down. Because at first, the angular momentum will hold it up against gravitational collapse. And then gradually it spins down, emits gravitational waves, loses angular momentum. Becomes more spherical, and at some point, and then it may spin down magnetically. I don't think it probably gets to that, but it could. And then at some point, it collapses into the black hole. My recollection is that that's a much longer time scale, like hundreds of milliseconds or longer. I don't concentrate on that because that's a much more uniform system, and there isn't so much non-uniformity that could where dissipation or relaxation or out of equilibrium physics, all these different things are pretty much the same thing, would play a big role. So I've been looking at as you saw in that plot of the density oscillations, I've been looking at it's the first few milliseconds is the most dramatic density oscillations, and then they settle down a bit. So that looks like the place where it would make the most impact. But you know, if it turned out that one of the things, some of the properties we feed into this simulation end up influencing that longer ring down and collapse stage, that would be great. It just doesn't look like it will.
Great, thanks.
Okay. Is there one more question then?
Okay.
Hi, I'm Filippo Ravello, and maybe this question is more suited for tomorrow given the topic, but I was thinking about still axioms, and I was wondering whether the fact is, if I'm correct, you said that they appear not to be relevant in, for example, thermal transport. Is that because the axioms that you would need are already excluded by other bounds, or?
Wait, say the question again. Is it because?
If I understood correctly, you said that looking at Alps, for example, wouldn't able to affect significantly.
Well, there was a corner of so there's a parameter space of it's the mass of the axion of the Alp and its coupling or something like that. And there's a corner of that space where they are consistent with the super 1987A bound on the coupling and could possibly radiate a significant amount of energy out of the merger. So just a little corner, and I'll show you that plot tomorrow. And it's the super 1987A bound on the coupling sort of rather limits your options. That's the thing that tells you, that puts a limit on how big a role they can play, because it puts a limit on their coupling.
Okay, probably it was exactly that.
Okay.
Thank you, Dalan. This is the end of the questions. So thanks to the speaker again. And we continue with Professor Bettini. And we want to know who has the questions.